Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
Corruption is very, very big business, and exposing it can be incredibly dangerous business. Well, not even exposing, sometimes just discussing it. Depends a little bit on where you live, I suppose, but it's always, always contentious stuff. And I'm joined by a couple of people in the drawing room who, frankly, would put most journalists on the planet to shame with the amount of risks that they take. They've both faced death threats, taking on some of the most corrupt and murderous regimes on the planet. I'm talking about regimes that are known for killing journalists, such as them, and anyone else really who dares to speak out. Lydia Cacho is a Mexican journalist who's written extensively about that country's drug cartels and pedophile rings. It's a miracle she's still here. And Masha Gessen is a Russian-American journalist and a biographer of Vladimir Putin, mostly unauthorised, and also of Pussy Riot. They joined me in the drawing room. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Can I say how happy I am that you are alive?
Thank you.
This is still happening.
We are too. How is this possible?
I love the directness with which you ask that question. You know, I got a letter from a stranger on Facebook yesterday that said, "I just finished your Putin book. Are you still alive?" And I get a lot of death threats on Facebook, but I thought, you know, should I report this as a death threat? What is this?
Was it a death threat?
I think it was, but I wasn't sure.
Well, when you said it, I got the impression it was like a fan.
Like a fan letter.
Yeah, no, I looked at his Facebook page, and I'm pretty sure it was a death threat.
Oh, right.
But yes, that's it gave me pause because it was like, well, yeah, he could also be a concerned fan, although that's a strange way of popping the question. I think it's a combination of care. And look, I was very careful when I was writing the Putin book to keep it secret until the publisher had the complete manuscript ready to go to print. So no one saw it, even the foreign publishers only saw a little bit and couldn't take it home. By the time we came out about its existence, it was a little too late to get rid of me because the book was already going to come out. Any kind of intelligence would tell them that at that point they would be better off keeping me alive.
Why? You might write another one.
No, I mean, cumulative damage is not something they think about.
If they don't take this the wrong way, I'm not advocating they do this, but if they had taken you out before it actually...
That would have been so good for the book.
Maybe, but you wouldn't then be touring the world, promoting it, but and then raising the things that are in this book to new audiences all the time.
I would still be a celebrity. They had, I mean, it sounds horrible, but they learned that lesson with Anna Politkovskaya.
Absolutely, that's what I was going to say, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The incredibly brave journalist who was shot in 2007, she became even more damaging to Putin's regime in death than she had been in life. And she'd done a lot of very good things in life. And Putin tends to actually say exactly what he means. We just should just listen to him more. He said the day after her death, he said, she does more damage to the regime now that she's been killed. And he was absolutely correct. So, you know, that's the careful planning part. And the luck part was when the book came out, the protest culture was at its height. So they had a lot of people causing problems. Yeah. I was just one of many all of a sudden.
Lydia, it scares me the way that you are nodding in recognition of all of this.
Of course. We're like a club, you know. The survivors club. Yeah,
but it sounds like, with the way that you were nodding as Masha was talking there, it made it sound like this is my insurance policy, that I'm better off to them alive, or at least not as big a problem alive than dead. And so I reckon I'm just punting on the fact they won't kill me.
You never know. I just have three friends that were assassinated last year, and they really did take care of themselves in Mexico. They flew away from the state in which the governor was threatening them, and then we protected them in Mexico City, and then they went back to Veracruz to work, and then they were assassinated.
So they did everything that they were meant to do.
They did everything they could. All of us are doing everything we can.
Do you?
Yes, of course, all the time. I have all these safety things that you wouldn't believe. I'm so used to them. And then I was kidnapped anyway, and I was tortured anyway. Then that's it. I don't know. One keeps on writing and working and trying to stay safe and telling the world about it and trying to raise the price in case they try to do anything, including not only organized crime, but also politicians. So I don't know, it's just life.
Do you know, I mean, I don't know about you, Lydia, but actually you are my insurance policy.
Right.
I mean, the more publicity I have in the West, the more protected I am. And, you know, for every one of us who gets a lot of publicity in the West, there are all these journalists who are doing incredibly brave stuff in their towns and cities who do not get translated into English and other languages, who do not get interviewed on Australian radio. And they're the ones who are in real danger, and they're the ones who mostly get killed.
Well, even Western journalists who end up in places like Syria or Iraq at the moment, which is obviously very topical. We've had that conversation on the show. What about the fact that you're also American? Is that a big insurance policy?
I don't think so. Anna Politkovskaya was an American citizen.
Yeah.
She, in some cases, it's worse, isn't
it? By accident of birth, yeah. Yes, I think that in terms of the likelihood of a vigilante going after me, it's worse. It's worse that I'm American. It's worse that I'm Jewish. It's worse that I'm gay. You know, all of those.
You tick a lot of boxes, don't you?
Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm going to do exactly what
I'm... Yeah, get the biggest target I possibly can.
Exactly.
But Lydia, is what Masha says there, is it true in your case? Does it apply to someone who's trying to expose drug cartels and pedophile rings? Do they care that you're now on a national radio show in Australia? Is it really going to make any difference?
In my case, I don't think so. No. There's a very strange thing with the drug cartel leaders in Mexico. For example, before I published Slavery, Inc., I tell this story in the book, but before I published the book, I was having lunch with some friends in a fancy restaurant in Cancun, where I live in Mexico, and then this guy sent us a bottle of champagne, and I refused the bottle, and then he came towards me, and he offered to kill the governor that tortured me and put me in jail, and he offered to kill some of the pedophiles that I wrote about in my previous book. He asked me just like this, just right in front of me, and he said, you know, you and I are so similar. We're fighting against the corrupted officials. And I was looking at this guy, and I'm like, this guy is the leader of the Zetas in Quintana Roo, where I live. And here he is offering me to kill the bad guys, which are the politicians linked to pedophiles. The only thing I could say was like, no, thank you. Nobody should get killed on my account. So then,
at least you said thank you.
Thank you. Yes, of course you have to. politeness before anything. So anyway, I write about this story, and then I publish a book. Months later, I'm in a restaurant again, in a little pizzeria with my sister, and then this guy comes over, and he comes towards me, and I'm like, shoot. And then he tells me, oh, you wrote a very, very good book, Miss Cacho. It's very good, very nice. And he's just smiling and nodding, like very proud that I told the story about him. So wow. I don't think that most of these guys would like to kill me. The ones that really want to get rid of me are the politicians, of course, that are linked to organized crime. Because I'm telling how they handle their money, how they launder the money, and how they use and abuse children and women in general, like for trafficking and everything. So they are the most dangerous people for me. And the more I write their names, the more people knows that if something happens to me, they will.
So both of you effectively seem to be agreeing that it's the political class you have to worry about. I mean, if you take on Vladimir Putin, he's got a reason to want to protect a reputation or at least manage a political image, and therefore he might kill you. But if you're talking about a drug cartel, well, they're not really playing for votes, are they?
Yeah. Well, see, I'm not actually worried about the politicians, because I think the politicians know that it would be bad for them if something happened to me. I'm worried about the vigilantes.
Oh.
Who, you know, who want to do something for their country.
Like nationalists, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and,
like
you know,
kill Anna, most probably did it for Putin's birthday, right?
Could be, or it could be set up. But I'm on, you know, I'm on all kinds of vigilante death lists. But there are dozens of people on these death lists. I'm not the only one. That's much more difficult to insure yourself against. Some people hire bodyguards. When I was living in Moscow full time, I would just never come home after dark without having somebody meet me outside my courtyard, that sort of thing. It's actually been very liberating to move to New York and live in Harlem, of all places, and feel so safe. I can come home by myself.
Yeah. How do you know there's no global reach? I mean, this is the nature of radicalized politics these days, is it's not so confined.
You're right, but we make our choices. I mean, I choose not to live in fear. I think the risks I'm taking in New York City are probably not that great.
You're in the drawing room. That is the voice of Masha Gessen, who is a journalist and the author of Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot, and The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. And Lydia Cacho is my other guest, also a journalist and the author of Slavery, Inc., The Untold Story of International Sex Trafficking. They are my guests in the drawing room, and as I said at the beginning, I'm very glad that they're alive to tell their stories. I just want to finish the story about you in the restaurant, though, Lydia.
Yep.
Because it's chilling, the tiny little gestures that seem to carry so much weight and so much consequence. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, yes. It's very strange. I've never had this feeling before. Here he was. He came towards me, and I knew who he was. I knew he was, I mean, he was supposedly being looked for by the police, but here he was in a nice restaurant. And he comes towards me. He says that he said, "Miss Cacho, I'm really proud of you, and you and I are very similar. We're working against the same guys, and, you know, nobody should be touching our children, you know. So let me help you with this." He named the names of the governor and of the businessman that got me kidnapped and everything. He said, I want to take them out. And then I went back to I said, "No, thank you." And I went back to my table. And then he said, "Okay, listen, I know you're a very decent woman. So let's make a deal. You'll sit down with your friends and then think about it. And once you decide you want them killed, what you do is you drop your napkin in the floor and then I'll know." So I just sat down back with my two friends and I'm like, "If anybody drops a napkin, I'll kill you."
Yeah. You know? So, well, yeah, of course you may well by dropping the napkin. Yes. This is the thing that blew my mind. It was that part of the story, because it just makes you realize the way that these things happen. It's minute little mundane things. I mean, it's very unlikely, but I could have been in that restaurant when you dropped your napkin and would have no idea the gravity of what's just happened.
Yes, of course. And that's in the last 6 years, there's 60,000 people that have been assassinated in Mexico by the supposed war against drugs that was implemented by Washington and the Mexican government. And most of these people are just people that were not committing crimes or anything. They were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there was crossfire between organized crime criminals and
the
police.
So they weren't all
dropped
napkins. It wasn't all that sort of situation.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Well, they kill people all the time in our country, and we just have to be careful.
I'm amazed hearing you speak with this sort of resignation, but I suspect you have a similar sort of thing where, life is just cheap in a lot of these circumstances.
It's realism. I don't think it's resignation. If it was resignation,
you wouldn't do it. Yeah,
we probably wouldn't
do
it,
this.
Yes.
But we are. I don't know. And I also think when you know you're good at your job, and you're a good journalist, and you're a good activist, and what you're doing means something to the people you know in your country or in your community, or even in other countries, then it makes sense. You know, maybe I wouldn't do this just for the glory of it. I mean, I wouldn't be going to Iraq just to cover, you know, the war and be brave and famous. I don't care for that, but I care for what I do because it makes difference. So it's just an ethical thing.
It's one thing being good at your job if you're like a school teacher. It's another thing being good at your job if it's to put yourself in these sorts of positions. I was just
okay, being famous is kind of fun too, though.
Yeah, we can come to the radio and talk about our lives.
We had this conversation on the show with a journalist who was reporting in Syria and Iraq and then just decided, you know what, not worth it. And the thing that they decided was not worth it is they'd come back to America and no one would believe what they were writing anyway and just say, well, you're in the media, you're making up lies all the time.
Well, I've done that. I did actually decide to give up war reporting at one point because I felt that it was the moment that I decided to give up war reporting. I was in Kosovo and I had been sentenced to be executed. And I was actually kneeling with a machine gun aimed at my head. And I thought, you know, the only reason I'm here is that I really wanted to do a story that I had been dreaming about doing for a long time. I wanted to do a story about the way a war starts. So I'd been cynically sitting around for years waiting for the war in Kosovo to start so I can swoop in at the very beginning and write that piece that I really wanted to write. And in a way, I think it's important, and I think it's it resulted in a great story, and I didn't get executed, but it was so totally not worth the risk. Mm. And so I decided to give up war reporting. But it was also because it wasn't my war. Mm. And later, when the second war in Chechnya began, I started doing a little bit of war reporting again, because it was my war.
Yeah. And so there's an investment there that is necessarily part of your life.
And a responsibility.
It's just what's astonishing listening to you speak is the way you casually drop in phrases like, I was sentenced to be executed, or I've been tortured. And there'll be people listening to this, and I assume you're comfortable talking about this stuff because you're publicly talking about it now. And there'll be people listening to this going, I have no conception of that moment of being tortured, or knowing that you're about to be tortured, or knowing that you've been sentenced to death, to be executed for something. Is there anything you can say to give us an insight into that?
Well, you have no idea until it happens to you. I was tortured by corrupted policemen for 20 hours before I got to jail and was kidnapped by the corrupted police by the orders of one of the governors who was protecting a pedophile network and of sex traffickers. Well, it's just very hard. It's very scary, and you're just fearing for your life for, it seems like, eternity. And then you find out 1 minute that you're alive and they didn't kill you, and then you arrive there. And I can only tell you that after 20 hours of torture before arriving to the place where the jail is, like 2,000 kilometers away from home, when I arrived, I was like so happy I was alive. And these guys were telling me I was going to be in jail, and I knew there was no charges, real charges against me, but I was just happy to be alive. And then you just keep on going from there. And they did this because they wanted me to say that book that I published before was just a lie,
right?
The entire thing. So I don't know, it's just to just survive. And then once you're ready, you talk about
it. How do you survive through torture? I can't imagine the moment. I can't imagine being tortured and in any way coping with it at any level.
Well, it's very hard. A lot of work, a lot of therapy, of course. And once the police is torturing you and telling you for 20 hours they're going to kill you, they take you like from one state to the other, and they keep doing these horrible things to you. Then once you arrive and you see your family, as I did, then I went like, okay, this is it. I'm not dead, and it's a good
and
thing,
that's enough.
You know. Yeah, of course it is enough, and you live day by day. You know, it's like one day at a time, and then I got out of jail, and then I went, after these guys, and then I wrote a book about
you
it.
Went
so.
Back.
Of course I did. And then I wrote the book about these guys, and then I took them to court. And that's what you do when this happens. Otherwise, then you surrender to corruption and to violence, and I'm not willing to.
Well, you're braver or much less sane than me. I can't even imagine this sort of environment.
You can say crazy, don't worry about it. I've heard it before.
Masha, what's it like to be sentenced to death?
It's scary as hell. And it made me feel like I'd made a mistake, because it's my responsibility to keep myself safe. I also felt like I was responsible for the three people who were with me, the photographer and the two interpreters. But, you know, I can't match Lydia's story, because I've never honestly been subjected to physical force. I've been threatened a lot. I've been threatened with kidnapping. I've been threatened with death. But I've never been subjected to physical pain. I have no idea how I would handle it.
But to be sentenced to death is not a million
miles
removed
nice.
From it.
No.
I mean, this is just as surreal, I think, for most people.
I think there's a significant difference. There's space for negotiation. What I actually ended up doing was I ended up talking to them and talking myself out of the death sentence. And so I think that's a very different story. You don't lose total control, which I think is what happens when you're subjected to physical force.
The powerlessness of it.
Right.
Well, Lydia and Masha are speaking at the Melbourne Writers Festival. They'll be doing that tomorrow and on Saturday. You can check the website for details if you want to hear more from them, and there is so much more to hear. They are then both off to the Festival of Dangerous Ideas in Sydney. Surely you guys would laugh at the title of that festival. I mean, danger? Really? Just talking at a festival? Yeah, right. Lydia Cacho's book is called Slavery, Inc., The Untold Story of International Sex Trafficking. And Masha Gessen's books are Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot, and The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. It's been an honour to have the chance just to speak to you, even for a brief moment. Enjoy your time in Australia, and thank you very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's The Drawing Room, and that's RN Drive, and that's it for me, actually, for the week. Rebecca Huntley will be in the chair for the Friday edition tomorrow. Remains for me only to thank the production team for the week. A huge thanks to executive producer Dina Rosendorf, who is slowly getting better after Entering the Good Ship RN Drive. Therapy sessions are working wonders. Also, the program producers, Melanie Christensen, Ellen Hoffman, Barbara Hagen, Erica Volser, Jisra Niffy and Janak Rogers. Technical producers this week, Matthew Sigley and Mark Veer. 6 o'clock Monday. I'll be back. Be great to see you then. Have a great weekend. Bye.